How would you found a business that has 300 employees in New Zealand? Well, stories. This is an interesting chat that goes on a beautiful journey from the 80s all up until now with twists and turns and shirts. There's something that involves shirts through this whole podcast that will start to make sense as you watch it. So let me know what you think. Let's kick into it. So we've got Martin here, prestigious ex-board member of Share NZ. You've been doing this, been in the business longer than I've been alive. But you had a plan before we even started talking that I don't even know where it's going to go. So have you got a story for us or an experience or a learning?
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully you find this interesting. I think we will watch a bit of podcast and I thought I'd try and put a slightly different spin on it to put some smiles on some faces or maybe keep people tuned in for a little bit. And I thought I'd actually start with my definition of having made it. Because I say that to a lot of people. What do you think? You know, when have you made things? When have you done it? And I've always come up with having the time, the money, and the health to go to any sporting or cultural event. So there's a lot of people who got the time, but they don't have the money. There's a shitload of people with the money and not the time. And clearly, if you don't have the health, you're not going anywhere. So that's one of my adages that I try to instill with people and try to, when they're young, try to get them to think about how to look after themselves and how to get going in life.
Does it count, include front row seats at the Super Bowl?
Sorry, you're frozen.
Oh, have I? Okay, well, don't worry, it'll kick off again and it's all like locally recorded. Welcome back.
Yep.
So as soon as we say everything's fine except the internet cuts out. But I was going to say, does that include buying a front row seat at the Super Bowl? Because that, what,
yes,
2 million?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I was thinking last night that I would like to go and watch the Phoenix playing Central Coast on the 6th of April in Central Coast. Do I have the money? Probably. Do I have the time? Possibly I could find it. Certainly got the health. So that's just the sort of things, you know, get up and go and do it if you can. You can't take your money with you.
No pockets and shrouds.
Yeah, so that brings me to another adage that I use quite often, and that's the definition of good financial planning. So I say with a wry smile that the definition of good financial planning is when your check to the undertaker bounces. Now, that's a little bit antiquated, of course, because we don't have checks anymore. But when your payment to the undertaker bounces, so if you can time it to that degree, you're doing bloody well and way better than anybody else, of course. So that's one of the things. So I sit here this morning and I thought, well, how can I operate or do this podcast? And I thought, well, maybe I'll do my shirt theory. And so I put on a shirt or two. So the one I'm wearing at the moment's pretty dear to my heart, which is a Wolverhampton Wanderers shirt. And why do I put that on first? Because I started following them when I was 12, which is a bit bizarre because that's 52 years ago. So why would some bloody kid in Auckland follow a football team in the middle of Birmingham in the UK? He didn't even know where it was. But they did come to New Zealand and I've followed them ever since. And it's a large part of my life, believe it or not. And I still can't tell you why. But, football's pretty cool. So I found out I put this shirt on because it's what I call a retro one. So it's what the shirts used to look like. So if I stand up a little bit, there's no advertising because they didn't have advertising when the shirt came out. So I just thought that might be a bit of humour and a bit of background because, yeah, I'm a bit of a football nut. Where to go from there? So I suppose the other big part of my life, and I've just got to remove the shirt, so just bear with me because I'm getting a bit hot. But I've got another shirt on. All right, so this one, if you can see, it's a bit hard to see there. Maybe it says Morangi Bay Surf Lifesaving Club, and it's interesting because it's also a bit of a retro shirt, so this is probably 50 years old. I had the good fortune as a 14-year-old to rock up to Morangi Bay Surf Club, and they said, well, you're pretty good-looking, you better join. Me and a few mates did, and that's one of the best decisions that I've ever done in my life. Little spotty teenager, gangly, didn't know how to swim properly. I could swim, but not properly. And a little bit time went by, and I got to 17. I was junior club captain. And in those days, I finished seventh form as a 17-year-old. I was a youngster, most of 18 when you leave school. And I was sitting down the beach about four or five months later. So I hadn't done any work, didn't know what I was going to do. I'd gone off university because I had an older brother who had done a double degree when he was 9 years older than me. So when I was 12, he was 21, and he was writing 20,000-word essays. I didn't want to write 200-word essays. So I worked out pretty quick following him that I wouldn't go to uni. So I was sitting down the beach one day, and a guy came up, one of the only a little bit older than me, and said, "Hey, there's a job going in my office. Are you interested?" And I said, "Well, I'm sitting on the beach. I suppose I should be." And that was really where my first work life started. And that was, believe it or not, debt collecting. But which when you're 17 and a bit small, debt collecting, but it was actually a desk job. And the, what I had to do was to get my clients to sue their clients. I take them to court for not paying their debts. So it sounds like a debt collection job, but that's what we were doing. But it was actually a sales job, completely unbeknown to me. And I got judged on however many times I could get my clients to sue their clients. It sounds a bit crazy, but hopefully you can follow that.
How do you sell that?
Pardon?
How do you sell the idea of suing someone?
Well, basically it was along the lines of, you're not going to get your money any other way. We've tried all the other ways. So you've got to take them to court. So you sue them. As soon as they said yes, that started the money rolling in for my company, because we would charge fees to them. And then if we collected the money, we'd get a commission. So you sort of get the idea. So the story has a couple of twists, but I 3 weeks into it, the boss calls me into the office and said, "Martin, you're not doing very well," which was, in hindsight, a no-shit Sherlock sort of angle, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't know how to pick a phone up. I didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm 3 weeks early, I was sitting on the beach. He said, "Well, if you don't get a few runs on the board, you're out." And believe it or not, I burst out crying, which is pretty humbling for a 17-year-old in his first job, bawling his eyes out in front of his boss. Anyway, true story. About 2 days later, a guy walked in, and his name, I still remember, was Bob Playl, and he ran a company called Ven Lurie. Ven Lurie is still going, and they do Venetian blinds. And V happened to be in my set, and he walked into the office and said, "I've got all these bastards, they won't pay, I want to sue them all." So he had about 13 people he wanted to sue, so I went from bottom of the pile to top of the pile. and without him, I would have been sacked. So that was sort of an interesting way to start your business life. So I managed a couple of years there and slowly went up. I should add, in those days, there was no computerization. It was all hard copy of everything. People would ring up the company as well and ask for a credit check. So we all know about credit checks, and that still happens, of course, but it was all manual. Someone would ring up and say, "We want to know about Ryan Melton's background." So you'd have to race across the room, find the M's, then the M's, and then M-E-L's, and try and find pieces of paper and see if there's any bad shit on you. And race back to the phone and tell the client, "No, you shouldn't do this. Well, you should do it because he's good." And that's sort of how that works. So how the world's changed, I suppose. So if I go back to the current shirt I'm wearing, which is Moree Bay Surf Club, one of the fortunate things in life-saving is that you meet a lot of people, and you meet a lot of good people in surf life-saving. They're there to have fun, or we're there to have fun, but we're doing this public service of sitting on the beach and rescuing the good-looking ones. but I mean, there's not much fun, believe it or not, sitting at Moree Bay thinking you're going to rescue somebody, because you're probably not, but you are training to be able to go and rescue people in other circumstances or other beaches. But if I come back to some of the people, I had coaches along the lines of a senior director as in a board member of Fletcher Challenge, which was the biggest company in the country in those days. Had a coach for quite a while who was a sales manager for New Zealand Forest Products, which was about the second biggest company in the country. I used to train with a guy called Steve Tindall, now Sir Stephen Tindall of the Warehouse fame. Another guy ran a research company. So that was, you've got to go back, I'm talking nearly 40 years, and he was developing, ringing up the public and asking them questions about commercial products, whether it be soup or whatever. He sold that business for many millions of dollars. So you're getting all the knowledge from these people. Just somehow you absorb it. You don't realize you're doing it. It just happens. So I find surf lifesaving has been tremendous for me. And it's tremendous from a business point of view. And it gives you all these contacts which still live on for today. Probably no different than rugby to an extent, or football, et cetera. But I found my place was surf and on the beach, and I still get involved, as we'll get into in a minute. So that's a bit about how I got into business. And then I was thinking, well, when I had enough of not getting up the ladder too far at that company, I ended up working for General Finance. And they were, what was called the old General Finance. They were a subsidiary of the National Bank in New Zealand, which was a public company, and the major shareholder was Lloyds Bank in the UK. But my boss in Auckland was a guy called Peter Thodey. And Peter turned up a few years later in Wellington as the managing director or chief exec of BNZ Bank. So here I was being a little credit controller for him and his branch. And a few years later, he's the head charang at BNZ. So again, you can't help but learn from these sorts of people. Funny how that sort of works, because I'll cover off Peter, because Peter didn't like mortgage advisors. So he refused to take or allow the BNZ to deal with us. I'm going back again, probably 25 years. So the BNZ got no business, as we know. Well, they did reverse that eventually when he left, almost immediately after he left. And now they get at least 50% of their business from mortgage advisors. Just shows that he got it wrong. But he can't get everything right in life. So that's enough on Peter Thodey.
Guy, you're the most prepared guest I've ever had. You got notes, you got shirts, you got reveals. There's almost another show. I feel like I just should have let you run. Keep going if you want.
Oh, it's all right. You've got to put some thought into this, or you end up looking like a dick. So I then, without trying to get too much in my background, I was actually offered a branch manager's job at General Finance, but it was on the same day I'd negotiated with the managing director of General Finance to get a job in the UK with a cousin company. So I had to pay my way there, but I had a 2-year leave of absence from General Finance, so I buggered off to the UK and had 17 months doing financing of invoices, or what was known as factoring, which hasn't really ever taken off in New Zealand. It has a little bit, but it's never really gone anywhere. I thought I could maybe use that when I came back, but I didn't like the product. Still don't like it. It just didn't sit well with me, but it was a bloody good way of seeing the world for a couple of years.
What is it? What's factoring?
Factoring, financing of invoice. What's a good example? You're a wholesaler. You do some work for somebody. You send them an invoice. They would normally pay on the 20th of the month following, but you need the money immediately. So the finance company, the factoring company, would send you the money, and then they would get paid by the wholesaler or by the client. So it was just bringing payments forward, I suppose. And the biggest problem with it is that when companies were struggling financially, they put a couple of fraudulent invoices through so they get some quick capital, and then they put a credit note through later to cancel it out, and then they'd slowly repay it. And there was a complete mistrust of the clients the whole time. And I didn't like that. But I did like the company car they gave me and the free petrol for about 14 months. And if you've ever driven the UK and it's still the same, the cost of petrol is enormous, even more than here. So that was more than welcome.
Fair enough. Sorry, Karen. Yeah, you went there. You couldn't bring it back, and then you found something.
Yeah, so I came back. I came back I don't dwell too, dwell too much, but I came back and rejoined General Finance, basically bang on 2 years from when I left. I actually rocked into the company. I got back on a Saturday, walked into the office on the Monday, and there was a new manager there, and he said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm Martin Robinson. Where's my company car?" Because they had to give me my old job back. That was the rules of my going away into this leave of absence. So, now this was pre-87, so early 87. And a thing came along called the share market crash in October 87. But preceding that, I'd tried to get my timing right. I'd had enough of General Finance. I didn't like this new manager. I changed to a company called IFC. A rep doing commercial lending. So my probably biggest job there was funding a retirement home. And that company, which was the major shareholder, was Ollie Newland. So some people may know Ollie Newland's name. He's written books and about financial management, which is interesting because his was the first public company to go bust after the New Zealand share market crashed, or the world share market crashed. He went bust at 6 p.m. Christmas Eve in 1987. So not particularly good timing, but I was fortunate they gave me 3 months' notice to finish off with my whatever business I was doing. And I looked around, and the only place I could find a job paying similar was in Wellington. So up sticks with the wife, and we came to Wellington. And I didn't know anybody in Wellington. Well, I didn't think I did, but I did actually, in hindsight, end up knowing a couple of people. So I've just got to remove this shit.
Oh, here we go.
But, and believe it or not, I ended up buying a house right opposite the famous and best surf lifesaving club in the world, being Lyell Bay. And I bought a house and I didn't know anybody in the club. And one day I saw somebody walk into the club and I thought, I know her. I know those legs and I know her posterior. So I thought I'd better go and follow her. So I went and followed her up the stairs and I said, "Karen, what are you doing?" She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm following you." She said, "Well, I'm going for a drink." I said, "Well, I better get some money." So she was going to the Sunday Sips. So the club has drinks on a Sunday. So I went up there and got introduced to everybody. And I should add, at Morangi Bay, I had been junior club captain, assistant club captain, or deputy club captain, chairman, so I knew what I was talking about. So this is in 88, I think, or 89, and I went to the following annual general meeting. Again, hardly anybody knew me. And they called for nominations for chairman. And it was all quiet. Anyone for chairman? So I nudged the guy next to me and said, "Can you nominate me as chairman?" And he said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm Martin Robinson." He said, "I nominate Martin Robinson." So, again, true story. So I went from nothing to be chairman. So that's been a huge part of my Wellington life, or our Wellington life. I still spend time down there, and I still go there on Sundays and have a quiet beer, which is one of the better spots in the country for a bar, looking over the Cook Strait, Wellington Airport, et cetera. So that's a bit of, and again, you get to know people, of course, and that's how you get on in life.
Yeah.
And I should add, we've got the Surf Lifesaving Nationals next week, so I'll be running a beach sprint, which as you get older, you run less distance, but it still takes you the same time.
Anyway, so you're still involved. Have you ever won anything?
I went, won two national titles, which is insignificant, but they're highly pleasing when you do win those. One was a junior title, one was an open title. But I've been doing beach sprints in the masters division, so. You've asked the question, and the answer is I haven't been beaten by a New Zealander since I turned 30. So and I've been beaten by an Australian once, and I actually welcomed that. That was about 3 years ago, and that's good for you to get a bit of a hiding occasionally.
Well, just on health and age, like how are you still sprinting, and what are you attest to staying agile? Because how many years young are you now?
I'm 63.
Yes, and you're sprinting. Like, well, I don't remember the last time I went for a sprint.
Yeah, you build up to trying to get to speed is the best way. In other words, start slow and then just slowly put a bit more percentage and effort in, and be bloody careful. A lot of stretching. This year I'm doing stretching mornings and nights every day, just on the legs. There's always something sore, something tight. You just got to be bloody careful. And given on competing in 9 days' time, I think I worked out today, more careful now than ever.
And how old are your competitors? Are they 60s as well?
You're going 5-year age brackets.
Okay, so they're within 5 years of you.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Are they even close?
So it's and it's not a big field, no.
But it
doesn't actually worry me. Last year I trained up and didn't go to the nationals, and the reason I didn't go is that Shear, my company, our company, had their annual conference at the same time, and I thought, well, I've got a reasonable amount of coin involved with Shear. If I miss a surf lifesaving nationals, I've done probably 40 of them or whatever, or 45. I don't really, it's not going to make a big difference, but I think I better, my priority, I put the business first, which is a bit unusual, but that's what I did. So.
Okay,
So
you recognize this girl, you walked in, now you're chairman, and then you know all these people. That's where you started before.
Yeah, that's right. So that's get you involved with people. The other thing I did when I came to Wellington was how do I, in business, because I was working for AGC Finance, was trying to work out, well, how do I meet people who wanted property finance? So I was doing property, commercial property deals. And they had a publication here which gave you the owners of every central city property. So you could, and it was pretty thick. I mean, you're talking a document was major size. So I started at the front page and I wrote to every property owner in the central city. Now, excluding the likes of the major superannuation companies, to any private owner I wrote to. I've got to tell you, I didn't write any business, didn't make a cent out of that, but I got to know a lot of people because I followed that up and went and saw people. And you keep on banging the door, something happens, and eventually something does happen. The difficulty I had with that job is that the share market crash had resulted in finance companies not wanting or being able to lend on commercial property. So really the job just disappeared and I ended up being a mortgage advisor. So that's how I got into it. It's just an evolution. So I went out to be a commercial mortgage advisor. I joined a guy who was already one, and I thought that was the way to go because, well, he obviously knows the ropes. He's been doing it for a while, blah, blah, blah. 3 months into that partnership, so we went in equal, no capital, just go straight in. I actually shared his vehicle because I didn't have one. I'd handed the company car back. and 3 months into that, I worked out he was a drinking alcoholic. So that sits you back, and I sat him down, and I said, we've got a bit of a problem here. And he said, yes, you're right. I'll stop drinking, and believe it or not, he did. Which was unbelievable, but that was for 3 months, and then so we're now 6 months down the track and he's back drinking again.
Okay.
To which I said, we better have a meeting, and he said, yes, I think I need to resign. I said, I think that'd be a bloody good idea.
There goes your car. Jeez. All right, yeah. So no. Now you got no car and half a business, or a whole business.
Correct. Yeah, a whole business and no car. Anyway, so that was the sort of the start of my mortgage advisory work, trying to do commercial loans. I'll get a prop. Bear with me.
He's just getting a prop. Oh gosh.
Yeah. No, I brought it home. Computerization wasn't too far around. Red book, around the right way. Yep. Okay. I've got a list of every mortgage that I've done since I started. So that's the first mortgage I did was on 20th of December 1988. And I can tell you who sent it to me, how much it was for, who I sent it to, and what commission I got paid.
What was the commission like back then, just out of curiosity?
That loan was a 450 grand loan. I took it at ANZ Bank. The customer paid 16% interest rate, 16%, yeah. Plus the bank charged him a 1% fee. And I made $3,500.
Oof, that's good back then, huh?
Back then it was pretty good, yeah. The best one I can tell you, which was the fourth loan I did, was $1 million loan. And it was for a guy who was designing the packaging for Tip Top ice blocks, so popsicles. And each year he would get an order to upgrade the popsicle wrapper. And the problem, and here it was all good, and he was going well, and he I can't remember what he wanted the million for now. Let's say it was a building. It must have been a building. So he was going along, and I did this loan, and I got a 10 grand fee, 1%. So that was fantastic. The problem he had is that one year Tip Top decided they would not redesign their wrappers. They just run with the previous year's wrappers. So he got no business and went out of, and he went bust.
Wow.
Yeah. Simple as that. He had all his eggs in Tip Top basket.
Tip Top basket, yeah.
Yeah. And down the dunny, there's a bit of a story. So there's a funny one. So that's the previous book. This is the current book. So I'm still doing it, believe it or not. So, you know, the last entry here is 1st of March. There's actually a guy on my football team. He's actually buying his ex-missus out of his property. He's going to borrow 623 grand. He's gone to Go Home Loans, which is the old Sovereign Home Loans. And that's number entry 3,836.
So that's a lot of mortgages.
Absolutely. They're not all gone through, but you know, that's, I put them in there when it's an application.
Yeah, wow.
But it is interesting. That's my life story, really. You know, the whole business is there.
What have been like your initial approach to getting mortgages across the line, like in terms of finding prospects and converting them, compared to now? Like, how has it sort of developed throughout the years?
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's a good lead-in. Thank you. When I went out working by myself, so my alcoholic partner had gone. No, before he had gone, we worked out we needed to do some residential work. We were only doing commercial, and it was very hard because the share market crash had stuffed the whole market. So we had to do residential. So we worked out, sat back and said, well, why would anybody come to us when it's going to cost them more to use us than go direct to a bank? And the answer was, well, they're not going to come to us. So we had to get the banks to pay us commission. So that was, you know, the light bulb went on. So we put a proposition to this entity called ANZ Bank. And back then they were the smallest bank. And we went specifically to them because ANZ was a trading bank. They did business, but they'd also bought another entity called Postbank. They bought that from the government. The Postbank was the People's Bank, which was probably a little bit like Kiwi Bank in today's market. And Kiwi Bank won't like that, but that's the way they sort of could be looked at. So after 3 months negotiation, believe it or not, the ANZ said, yes, we'll pay you commission. So that was pretty cool. So we were just ahead of the market, really. Now, in those days, the banks, when they did a home loan, they charged every customer 1%. And the average mortgage, I reckon, was 60 grand. So the customer was getting charged $600 fee up front. And we were getting half of that. So we were making $300 a mortgage.
Wow, half. That's wild. Wow. That's good negotiation. Jeez, they must have been desperate. 50-50.
So And I can remember sitting there, when you get a loan through, and I'd be punching the air because I made $300. It sounds so ludicrous, but that was the way it is. Again, I can show you all the commission I earned on all those deals. And you know, it was in that sort of level. It was amazing. But
yeah.
Again, that was the infancy, really, of mortgage advisory work in the country for advisors. Now, there were a few other mortgage brokers out there, but not really doing a lot of residential work. We were dealing with the bums, the people that couldn't get the loans because they had bad credit, et cetera. Or commercial, that was a little bit different, but you had to charge fees. So that's how I got into that. Coming back to then, how do you get your customers? I just thought, well, the real estate companies was the obvious place to go. So I mothered up to a number of real estate companies. One of the things I did when I, shortly after my partnership finished, I lived in Lyle Bay. The next door suburb is Kilburnie. Harcourts were in Kilburnie. And I can't remember how it came about, but five of us decided we would run an office together. So there was me, there was a lawyer, a valuer, an insurance advisor, and Harcourts being the real estate agent. So we would all, the real estate agent would refer the business to me, I'd do the mortgage, the valuer would do the value, the lawyer would do the stuff, and the insurance guy would insure it all. Pretty simple. Yeah. I was the only one working there because they all had other offices, or the real estate agent was next door. So I got an office for, I still remember, $45 a month. That was my rent. Funny how that works. And I could use the real estate agent's facilities, kitchen, et cetera. And that's sort of how I started getting referrals. And then obviously once you do a job that's reasonably good, you get another one. And those people start giving you more, and so it goes on. The other one I did is I somehow tripped over the professionals who were out in Porirua Way, and they had four or five offices. And I was doing, I got really close to them. They wanted me to be their full-time mortgage advisor working out of there, but I whatever reason, I just didn't want to go with one company. If something went wrong, you lose that rapport and whatever. But I did a lot of business in Porirua. For anyone in Auckland that looks at, thinks about that, well, Porirua in those days, I'm afraid to tell, let's call it the same as South Auckland. So it was a tough area, lower socioeconomic, but they were great clients, 99.9% paid. But they were great clients because they would take whatever you could virtually get. You'd do as best you could, but they didn't. A lot of them had so little income. If we could get something through, it was just fantastic for them. So I did a lot of work there, but it meant a lot of night work out in Porirua. So I was working two to three nights and evenings seeing people. And then one day I thought, sure, I got enough business. I don't need to go out at nights so much. So I stopped marketing to them. And it's funny, they'd stop sending me business. but anyway, since then, I really haven't advertised for 40 years. It's all word of mouth. And repeat clients. Nothing other than that. Simple. So if you do something good, all things come to you.
Have you put much thought process into either making referrals easier for them or what constitutes a good perception of your service?
Not really. I've always been reluctant to pay for referrals. So I mentioned that professionals wanted me to be the in-house broker, as we were called in those days, now an advisor. The difficulty I had with that, I've already mentioned that you're a one-stop shop then. And then a lot of real estate companies have employed mortgage advisors in-house, but professionals wanted the the owners of the professionals wanted a cut of my income, and then they wanted to give a further cut to their sales and real estate agent, and then I get what's left over. I'd rather do one deal for a full amount rather than two deals to give them half of that. In other words, I didn't really want to split. I'd rather do less work. So I probably should have tried to get more advisors or more mortgage advisors working for me and ran that model. But I suppose it just didn't happen, just didn't evolve that way. I have had associates work for me. By and large, not really worked out. So maybe I'm not a good manager. And you just, accept and move on.
So what's obviously you've got a plan with this story, maybe another shirt coming, don't know, or a frock.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, well, keep going then.
yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of how it started. But then I this my office, which was costing $45 a month, the insurance advisor, he started doing mortgages. So that started to fall apart, and I had a guy who was sending me mortgage referrals, and he was an insurance advisor, and he said, well, why don't you come and sell insurance at Prudential where I am, and you'll get a free office. And I thought, free office? This is sounding pretty good. So I became a Prudential agent. In those days, you were a tied agent, so you weren't allowed to sell for anybody else. So they gave me an office. So I mainly did mortgages, and then I would try and write some life insurance off the back of that. The thing with life insurance is I thought it was life insurance, but then it became income protection. But they also sold superannuation, lump sum investments, and fire and general insurance. So I got an NZI agency. So all of a sudden, I went from being a mortgage advisor to an insurance advisor with more and mortgages. So, and nobody in that floor, and there was probably 20 people, none of them did mortgages. So I had 19 other people to refer business to me. Anyway, I'm a bit conscious I'm waffling away a bit, so I better take this one off and pop this one. One of the things I did, a bit hard to see this, but there's a goat there, and it's an event which I did. And one of the things that I was fortunate enough through the insurance industry was the guy that got me into Prudentials, he was in what he called a buddy group. And he said, why don't you do a buddy group? And I said, what's that? And he said, well, you get someone your age or someone you get on with who's not in our district because you don't want to compete with them, and maybe get three of you along those lines, and you sort of use it as a motivational group. So we had a guy in Auckland, a guy in Whanganui, and myself in Wellington, and each week we would fax each other how many appointments we'd done the previous week, how many sales we'd done, how much what we call annual premium was getting paid on the insurance side, and how much income we got. And we'd meet every 3 months. We would review how we'd gone for the 3 months. We would do some exercise, hence this was the goat, which is a run. And then we would probably drink up quite large and socialize. And then our wives started to join in. So they'd come along to the meetings or the social part of that. But this particular goat, that's a run from Whakapapa to Tūroa, around the side of Ruapehu. It's 21Ks. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. Try it one day if it's still going. So that was just to remind you about that buddy group. And I think that's just tremendous. If anybody can get into that, they should do. It's just so simple in a real good way. And we used to fax each other. Now you don't have faxes anymore. So they're again showing my age. So anyway, that's the MBM group. So what have we got here then? So we end up with Share. We're getting closer to Share, which is the group I work with. So Share evolved out of when Sovereign came along and ended up taking over. Prudential got bought by Colonial. Colonial got bought by Sovereign. Sovereign didn't want to subsidise advisors' offices anymore, so they said, go out and look after yourselves. We'll pay you a bit more commission. And I was in an office in those days, and there was now five of us sharing an office in Wellington, and there was another group in Auckland of eight. And we decided we would join together to give 13. And by having 13, we could negotiate better deals with insurance companies. So pretty common sense. And we formed an entity called Apex Financial. I was never comfortable with the name, but that didn't really matter. Cut the long story short, we got up to about 23, 24 people in that little group. And we used to meet twice a year and have major discussions, normally arguments, how to advance things. And one day we were almost falling apart, and we actually, believe it or not, had a meeting at the Lyle Bay Surf Club premise. And we got a outsider, and he said, well, you either grow or disband and go and join some other group. And I said, well, how do we grow? And he said, you've got to get a chief exec. So we cut the long story short, we went out and got a chief exec, which was a young lady, Bronwyn Shanks, who is now Bronwyn Kerman, who's the distribution manager at Fidelity Life now. So she became our chief exec, our first one, and she wanted to change name from Apex, which we were all comfortable with. And we had a function in Auckland to launch the new name. Nobody knew what it was. So some advertising company had been paid several thousand dollars to dream up a name. And unbeknown to me, that you're like, hopefully you like this, the function was meant to be suit and tie and very tidy. But I didn't read that because I don't know, I was probably too busy. But I wore this T-shirt, which I don't know if you can see there, but it says, "Who are you?" And on the back has got the Phoenix Football Club. So it's a Yellow Fever, the supporters group. So I turned up in this bloody shabby bloody T-shirt saying, "Who are you?" Which actually was absolutely spot on because we were changing name. "Who are you?" And the answer was, "Cher." So there you are. So somehow I lucked it. I turned up in the pretty old shirt. So we then end up with, as I've just said, with Cher. So, and Cher's been marvellous. I mean, it's hard to explain how good it is, the camaraderie. I think it's the best group out there. I'm convinced of that. We all now trade as Cher on our side of the business. We've ended up buying New Park, who are a mortgage entity with 220 advisors. They're growing, we're growing. We've got Fire in General. I own shares in Cher, and anybody that joins can buy shares in Cher. We're a co-op, so nobody's different. We're all equal. So that's bringing us, you know, right forward to sort of almost the present, I suppose. Yes, I was a board member for a short period. That sort of, I got seconded onto the board, and 1 year I had to, it was my turn to stand down. Every several years you've got to stand down and get re-elected, and we were going to reduce the number of board members. So the other person standing down that year was Richard Thomas, the chairman. So it was me versus him for one position. So I pulled out of that election, and he's still running the place. And that's probably been fortuitous to me because it's given me more time to run my business.
Yeah.
So that's a bit about Cher.
It's huge. Well, I made a big list of advisors in court, and Cher keeps coming up. How actually big is it? Like, it looks huge. So 200 plus.
No, so we're about 70, what we call distributors. So that people writing business.
Yeah.
In Cher. Of which roughly 40, I think, are shareholders. So the other ones can become shareholders if they wish. But then we bought this entity, New Park, or New Park Home Loans. So there's 220 plus there. So you put the two together, you're saying 300.
Yeah.
We're just developing our fire in general business. But the business does primarily, New Park does primarily mortgage, but insurance as well, KiwiSaver, investments, and fire in general. So what do you, really the suite.
What do you attest to the success of the business? Because that's a rare, like, very few companies in general New Zealand get this, that size, let alone financial advisory firms. They're not really. What would you say is success?
Energy of the board, the original people that were involved. As in, you know, there's 25 of us, 23 or 25 of us to start with. So we had a good core of pretty successful insurance advisors. I was really the only mortgage guy. Even now, Cher's only got about 5 mortgage people, but we've got New Park on the other side who are integrating with us. I suppose, again, it's just evolution to an extent that you can't operate in the financial services market by yourself anymore. There's too much regulation, too many things you've got to do. I haven't got time to go and research all that. I'm pissed off enough with what I've got to do already. Business continuity plans and CBD plans, and I'm almost got to have a plan to work out a plan. It's just, let alone the amount of webinars we do from, and I'm a GP, so I'm doing the KiwiSaver, the mortgage, the insurance, and the general insurance. So I've got to keep up scratch with all of it. And maybe on that angle, that the GP, the analogy compared to the medical profession is that the GP doesn't make as much money as the specialist. And I'm sort of a little bit conscious of that. Maybe I've gone down the wrong path. It's probably a bit late now. But when the mortgage market goes quiet, I just go and do insurance. So, and vice versa. And that clearly gives you trail commission, which is always welcome.
Yeah. It seems like you got another shirt there.
I'm now trying to work out how to go to any sporting or cultural event that I want to. Brings us back to the beginning, you see. So I thought I could do one last shirt, which is pretty important at the moment. And that's the Magic Phoenix, which is a great Wellington and New Zealand entity. And given their top of the pops at the moment, I'm allowed to promote them. Having followed Wolverhampton Wanderers in the UK from the first division to the fourth division back to the Premiership, now following the Phoenix, it's all good fun. And it doesn't matter. That's the good thing. It doesn't matter whether they win or lose, really. Just makes me sad or happy.
Yeah. So have we finished all the shirts? That's done.
Yeah, done. Last shirt.
Right on time as well.
You're conscious of that, don't you worry.
You're just sweating in your shirts. Like, how long did it take to prep the shirts, just out of curiosity? Like, how long were you sitting there sweating with 20 shirts?
I thought about that last night at about 3 a.m. and I trained this morning and I got the shirts out at about 8:30. We started at 9:00. I didn't put them on till 8:55. There you go.
Bum. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's a beautiful story, Mark.
All right. Hopefully you've enjoyed that. I did. Thank you for your time.
That's right. Done. Well, there you go.